control loan sharks, backed by the guns of market and with military profiteers. Whose word is a swamp and whose brow is smeared with the blood of the poor. Who rob life of its quality, who render rage a necessity by turning countries into labor camps. Modern slavers and dragons, champions of freedom. Sinister, cynical instrument who makes the gun into a sacrament. The only response to the deification of tyranny by so-called developed nations, idolatry of ideology. West, kill the best and buy the rest. Just spend a buck to make a buck. You don't really give a flying fuck about the people in misery. IMF, dirty MF, takes away everything it can get. Always making certain that there's one thing left. Keep them on the hook with insupportable debt. Passing themselves off as leaders. Kiss the ladies, shake hands with the fellows, and it's open for business like a cheap bordello. And they call it democracy. 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 And see the loaded eyes of the children too, trying to make the best of it the way kids do. One day you're gonna rise from your habitual feast to find yourself staring down the throat of the beast they call the revolution. IMF, dirty MF, takes away everything it can get. Always making certain that there's one thing left. Keep them on the hook with insupportable debt. Call it democracy. And they call it democracy. And they call it democracy.
Jump into the John Pilger's Julian Assange interview because they say it better than me.
The FBI, it has become effectively America's political police. And the FBI demonstrated with taking down the former head of the CIA over classified information given to his mistress. Almost no one was untouchable. The FBI is always trying to demonstrate that. No one can resist us. But Hillary Clinton very conspicuously resisted the FBI's investigation. So there's anger within the FBI because it made the FBI look weak. Well, we've published quite a number of different sets of emails. So
Well, we'll get to that. The punchline is, since these guys talked, FBI said, no bad, nothing here, move along, folks, so that I was going to jump right back to what you were listening to before, 104.1 FM, which was Political Crisis in America. About 5 minutes, he's explaining the payoff to the family, given all the names and the cash amounts, basically $500,000, so FBI falls on chump change to go along with the child molestation that is part and parcel of your Salafist principality, gringo, your Western project to take down the Socialist Republic. There's, over half a dozen on your post-9/11 hit list. Syria among them, Libya, of course, Iraq, all those socialist states where I wouldn't have needed that $20 to send it with my medical school application. Averaging 90th percentile, but no siree. If you don't got the do-re me, I would have been a doctor in Syria, Libya, Iraq, but not in the U.S. of...
was number two man, and he was put in charge of the Clinton email investigation. How convenient. It's very similar to, the mafia boss in the 1930s. We see it on Hollywood buying up the police election campaign in Virginia. Now, this money was sent through the governor of Virginia. When I started investigating this over the weekend, I looked at the preamble to this event, and I think this is absolutely crucial. On the 24th of October, in other words, 4 days before the release of the second letter, there was a revelation in the Wall Street Journal, which I think is fundamental, pointing to bribery, fraud and corruption within the FBI, triggered by approximately 500,000 donation to the wife of a senior official in the FBI for her election campaign in Virginia. Now, this money was sent through the governor of Virginia. It was never acknowledged in the official records of donations for her campaign. From my point of view, it was a payout. But it was a payout not only to her, but to her husband, who is a senior member of the FBI. I'm talking about Dr. Jill McCabe, who was the candidate, and she is the wife of FBI official Andrew McCabe. Now, what happened is that Andrew McCabe, a few months after the election, which she lost, incidentally. She didn't get her seat. A few months later, in January of this year, 2016, Andrew McCabe was appointed deputy director of the FBI, in other words, number two man, and he was put in charge of the Clinton email investigation. How convenient. It's very similar to, the mafia boss in the 1930s, we see it on Hollywood buying up the police, okay? You give them a bribe of $500,000, then you put them in charge of an investigation on organized crime, and their function essentially is to stall that investigation. Now, that works as long as the information is not made public regarding this corruption within the FBI. In other words, number two man, Andrew McCabe, is corrupt. There are pressures from within the FBI directed against the director, James Comey. And I assume that James Comey also wants to ensure his authority and quote-unquote integrity. So ultimately, that is one of the elements. There are other complex elements with regarding the emails. But that's one of the elements which I think triggered James Comey's second letter. Because for one thing, I don't think he wanted to be entirely complicit with this bribery of the $500,000, which was paid to his colleague, number two man, and so on and so forth. But what is very important is that Hillary gave $500,000 to a senior police officer in the FBI in exchange for favors regarding the Clinton investigation, which was not strictly limited to the emails. It was also pertaining to the Clinton Foundation and so on and so forth. There's a whole string of criminality behind the Clinton family. So that
That is going on in the background of the John Pilger Assange conversation about her funding her enemy, ISIS, okay? So our Takfiri Salafist principality over there, we're calling it the Islamic State, for God's sakes, they have been waging war on socialism since the war on the USSR. Let's take 1973, when the Arab oil embargo kicks off in response to the 73 war, the West marching north through Lebanon, east through Syria, and south through Egypt and all. Back to...
The FBI, it has become effectively America's political police. And the FBI demonstrated with taking down the former head of the CIA over
classified
of emails. So about 33,000 of Clinton's emails while she was Secretary of State. They come from a batch of just over 60,000 emails. In that 60,000 emails, Clinton has kept about half, 30,000, to herself, and we have published about half. And then there's the Podesta emails we have been publishing. Podesta is Hillary Clinton's primary campaign manager. So there's a thread that runs through all these emails. There is quite a lot of pay for play, as they call it, taking, giving access in exchange for money for many different states, individuals and corporations, combined with the... cover-up of the Hillary Clinton emails while she was Secretary of State has led to an environment where the pressure on the FBI increases.
I mean, the Clinton campaign has said that Russia is behind all of this. It says that Russia has manipulated the campaign and is the source for WikiLeaks and its emails.
The Clinton camp has been able to project a kind of neo-McCarthyist hysteria that Russia is responsible for everything. Hillary Clinton stated multiple times, falsely, that 17 U.S. intelligence agencies had assessed that Russia was the source of our publications. Okay, that's false. We can say that the Russian government is not the source. Yes. WikiLeaks has been publishing for 10 years. In that 10 years, we've published 10 million documents, several thousand individual publications, several thousand different sources, and we have never got it wrong.
All the emails that give evidence of access for money and how Hillary Clinton herself benefited from this and how she is benefiting politically are quite extraordinary. I'm thinking of where the Qatari representative was given 5 minutes with Bill Clinton for $1 million check, and many other examples.
$12 million from Morocco.
$12 million from Morocco.
For Hillary Clinton to attend.
In terms of the foreign policy of the United States, that's where, for me anyway, where the emails are most revealing, where they show the direct connection between Hillary Clinton and the foundation of jihadism, of ISIL, in the Middle East. Can you talk something about that? How the emails demonstrate this connection between those who are meant to be fighting the jihadists, ISIL, are actually those who have helped create it.
There's a early 2014 email from Hillary Clinton, so not so long after she left Secretary of State, to her campaign manager, John Podesta. That email, it states that ISIS, is funded by Saudi Arabia and Qatar, the governments of Saudi Arabia and Qatar. Now, I think this is the most significant email in the whole collection. And perhaps because Saudi and Qatari money is spread all over the place, including into many media institutions. All serious analysts know, even the US government has mentioned or agreed with, that some Saudi figures have been supporting ISIS, funding ISIS. But the dodge has always been it's just some rogue princes using their cut of the oil money to do whatever they like, but actually the government disapproves. But that email says that no, it is the governments of Saudi and the government and Qatar that have been funding ISIS.
The Saudis, the Qataris, the Moroccans, the Bahrainis, particularly the Saudis and the Qataris, are giving all this money to the Clinton Foundation, while Hillary Clinton is Secretary of State and the State Department is approving massive arms sales, particularly to Saudi Arabia.
Yeah. Under Hillary Clinton, and our Clinton emails reveal significant discussion about it, the largest ever arms deal in the world was made with Saudi Arabia, more than $80 billion. In fact, during her tenure as Secretary of State, total arms exports from the United States in terms of the dollar value doubled.
Doubled. And of course, the consequence of that is that this notorious terrorist jihadist group called ISIL or ISIS is created largely with money from the very people who are giving money to the Clinton Foundation.
Yes.
That's extraordinary.
Look, Hillary Clinton's just a person. I actually feel quite sorry for Hillary Clinton as a person, because I see someone who is eaten alive by their ambitions. Tormented, literally to the point where they become sick, you know, they faint as a result of going on and going on with their ambitions. But she represents a whole network of people.
And at that point, DJ Mouse has to jump in. Well, I have to segue to somewhere, and he said, Julian Assange mentioned sick, so having recent fractures having to do with anger issues, and the impulse to respond in kind, realizing I was about to self-destruct, to those who were responsible, like William Joseph Casey, born Elmhurst, Queens, New York in 1913. My defense. Founding member Bolsheviks Anonymous realized that only by appealing to a power higher than ourselves can we overcome our disability, be happy hippies, and happy hippies don't kill, pay ball. And maybe play songs like that.
If I had a rocket launcher,
Missiles to jihadi death squads in Damascus and Aleppo, gringo. I'll tell you what, you're gonna have an enemy to fight, you're gonna call it ISIS. But 1973, now we've got alcohol, you mix the alcohol, you don't gotta put lead in like those stupid Nazi pigs used to keep the high compression from blah, blah, blah. You got a catalytic converter to deal with nitrous oxides that might slip by, but you can get 50 miles to gallon. Just strip off some metal, put a 3.5 foot high fiberglass Formula V together, 1,300 pounds. You can go Klamath Falls to 30 miles past Sacramento on a little over 7 gallons of gas. Say 350 miles divided by 7 is 50 miles a gallon. Okay, you need high compression pistons. Old, like half century old technology. It was a 65 pancake engine in my Avenger. So that was 73. Now, UN, resolution where you bayoneted my stunt double gringo. You're doing all this whoring your soul to these Nazi pig MFs, and I'll just let Julian and John run them down here. Oh, and then Abby Martin's going to run down the Podesta brothers, John and Nazi pig brothers.
Network of relationships also with particular states. The question is, how does Hillary Clinton fit in this broader network? Well, she's a centralizing cog, so that you've got a lot of different gears in operation from the big banks like Goldman Sachs and major elements of Wall Street and intelligence and people in the State Department and the Saudis and so on. She's the, if you like, the centralizer that interconnects all these different cogs. She's a smooth central representation of all that. And all that is more or less what is in power now in the United States. It's what you'd call the establishment or the DC consensus, and its influences. In fact, one of the more significant Podesta emails that we released was about how the Obama cabinet was formed. And half of the Obama cabinet was basically nominated by a representative from Citibank.
Well,
it was quite amazing.
Didn't Citibank supply a list? Which turned out to be most of the Obama cabinet.
Yes.
So Wall Street decides the cabinet of the President of the United States.
But if you were following the Obama campaign back then closely, you could see it had become very close to banking interests. It wasn't so close to oil interests, but it was very close to banking interests.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think you can't properly understand Hillary Clinton's foreign policy without understanding Saudi Arabia. The connections with Saudi Arabia are so intimate.
Why was she so demonstrably enthusiastic about the destruction of Libya? Can you talk a little about just what the emails have told you about what happened there? Because Libya is such a source for so much of the mayhem now in Syria, the ISIL jihadism and so on. And it was almost Hillary Clinton's invasion. What do the emails tell us about that?
Libya, more than anyone else's war, was Hillary Clinton's war. Barack Obama initially opposed it. Who was the person who was championing it? Hillary Clinton. That's documented throughout her emails. She put her favoured agent, in effect, Sidney Blumenthal, onto that. There's more than 1,700 emails out of the 33,000 Hillary Clinton emails we published just about Libya. It's not about that Libya has cheap oil. She perceived the removal of Gaddafi and the overthrow of the Libyan state something that she would use to run in the general election for president. So late 2011, there's an internal document called the Libya TikTok that is produced for Hillary Clinton. And it's all the... It's a chronological description of how Hillary Clinton was the central figure in the destruction of the Libyan state. As a result, there was around 40,000 deaths within Libya. Jihadists moved in, ISIS moved in. That led to the European refugee and migrant crisis, because not only did you have people fleeing Libya, people then fleeing Syria, destabilization of other African countries as a result of arms flows. The Libyan state itself was no longer able to control movement of people through it. Libya faces onto the Mediterranean. And so it had been effectively the cork in the bottle of Africa. So all problems, economic problems, civil war in Africa, previously people fleeing those problems didn't end up in Europe because Libya policed the Mediterranean. And that was said explicitly at the time, back in early 2011, by Gaddafi. What do these Europeans think that they're doing?
Well, and back to 1973, you see, because all the gas stations in the nation, I believe, were shut on Sunday, I could drive 45 miles an hour on Interstate 5 all the way from Klamath Falls to Sacramento. And you see, it's not safe to drive 45 on the freeway, but unless you got the straightest, flattest route, which is Interstate 5, how are you going to alter your state without, like, spending zillions of bucks? So 50 miles a gallon. And I remember when gas was, like, 29 cents a gallon, but... That would be like less than a penny a mile. Never mind. The point was that 1973 is the UN resolution in 2011 when NATO bombed the last independent country in Africa, who could raise the issue of the plight of the survivors of the African genocide in the Americas.
Trying to bomb and destroy the Libyan state. There's going to be floods of migrants out of Africa and jihadists into Europe, and that is exactly what happened.
You get a lot of complaints from people saying, what is WikiLeaks doing? Are they trying to put Trump in the White House?
My analysis is that Trump would not be permitted to win. Why do I say that? Because he's had every establishment offside. Trump doesn't have one establishment, maybe with the exception of the evangelicals, if you can call them an establishment. But banks, intelligence, arms companies...
Well, they all want him.
Beat foreign money, etc.
Yeah.
Is all united behind Hillary Clinton. Mm. And the media as well. So... media owners and even journalists themselves.
The accusations that WikiLeaks is in league with the Russians, and you hear people saying, well, why doesn't WikiLeaks investigate and publish emails on Russia?
We have published over 800,000 documents of various kinds that relate to Russia. Most of those are critical. Most of those are critical. And a great many books have come out of our publications about Russia, most of which are critical. And our documents have gone on to be used in quite a number of court cases, refugee cases of people fleeing some kinds of claimed political persecution in Russia, which they use our documents to back up.
Do you take yourself a view of the US election? Do you have a preference for Clinton or Trump?
Donald Trump, what does he represent in the American mind and in the European mind? He represents American white trash. Deplorable and irredeemable. Basically the same thing. It means from a establishment or educated, cosmopolitan, urbane perspective, these people are, you know, they're like the rednecks, and you can't, like, they're just, can never deal with them. And because he so clearly, through his words and actions and the type of people who turns up his rallies, represents people who are not the middle, not the upper middle class educated. There's a fear of seeming to be associated in any way with that, a social fear that lowers the class status of anyone who can be accused of somehow assisting in any way Trump, including by criticizing Clinton. Yeah. And if you look at how the middle class gains its economic and social power, it makes absolute sense.
Because that, not to mention the greater evil there, but trumping up the sick fart joke of an opponent by the greater evil. Oh no, I'm confused about which is the greater evil actually, but the point being, a thick fart joke of an opponent. That's, you know, her bosom buddy, right, at the front of his wedding, was she not?
I'd like to talk about Ecuador, the small country that has given you refuge and given you asylum in this embassy in London. Now, Ecuador cut off the internet from here, where we're doing this interview, in the embassy, for the clearly obvious reason that they were concerned about appearing to intervene in the US election campaign. Can you talk about why they would take that action and your own views on Ecuador's support for you?
Let's go back 4 years ago. Right. Ecuador, I made an asylum application to Ecuador in this embassy. Because of the U.S. Extradition case.
Yeah.
And the result was, after a month, I was successful in asylum application. And then the embassy has been surrounded by police. Quite an expensive police operation, which the British government admits to spending more than £12.6 million. They admitted that over a year ago. And now there's undercover police and there's robot surveillance cameras of various kinds. So that there has been a quite serious conflict right here in the heart of London between Ecuador, a country of 16 million people, and the United Kingdom, and the Americans who have been helping on the side. So that was a brave and principled thing for Ecuador to do. Now we have the US election on foot. The Ecuadorian election is in February next year. You have the White House feeling the political heat as a result of the true information that we have been publishing. WikiLeaks does not publish from the jurisdiction of Ecuador. From this embassy or in the territory of Ecuador. We publish from France, we publish from Germany, we publish from the Netherlands, and a number of other countries, so that the attempted squeeze on WikiLeaks is through my refugee status. And this is really intolerable. If you try and get at a publishing organization to try and prevent it publishing true information that is of intense interest to the American people and others about an election.
Tell us what would happen if you walked out of this embassy.
So I would be immediately arrested by the British police, and I would then be extradited either immediately to the United States or to Sweden. In Sweden, I am not charged. I've already been previously cleared, etc.
Yeah.
So we're not certain exactly what would happen there, but then we know that the Swedish government has refused to say that they will not extradite me to the United States. And they have extradited 100% of people that the US has requested since at least 2000. So over the last 15 years, every single person the US has tried to extradite from Sweden has been extradited, and they refuse to provide a guarantee. So it's, yeah.
I mean, people often ask how you cope with the isolation here.
Look, one of the best attributes of human beings is that they are adaptable. One of the worst attributes of human beings is they are adaptable. They adapt and start to tolerate abuses. They adapt to being involved themselves in abuses. They adapt to adversity and continue on. So in my situation, frankly, I'm a bit institutionalized. This is the world. Visually, this is the world.
It's the world without sunlight, for one thing, isn't it?
It's a world without sunlight, but I haven't seen sunlight in so long. Like, I don't remember it. So, yeah, you adapt. The one real irritant is that my young children, they also adapt. They adapt to being without their father. That's a hard adaption, which they didn't ask for.
Do you worry about them?
Yeah, I worry about them. I worry about their mother.
Yeah. Some people would say, well, why don't you end it and simply walk out the door and allow yourself to be extradited to Sweden?
The UN has looked into this whole situation. They spent 18 months in formal adversarial litigation, me at the UN versus Sweden and the UK. Who's right? The UN made a conclusion. I'm being arbitrarily detained, illegally deprived of my freedom, that what has been occurred has not occurred within the laws that the United Kingdom and Sweden must obey. It is an illegal abuse. United Nations formally asking, what's going on here? What's your legal explanation for this? He says that you should recognize his asylum. Sweden formally writing back to United Nations says, no, we're not going to. Mm-hmm. So leaving open their ability to extradite. I just find it absolutely amazing that the narrative about this situation is not put out publicly in the press.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't suit the Western establishment narrative that, yes, the West has political prisoners. It's a reality. It's not just me. There's a bunch of other people as well.
Yeah.
The West has political prisoners. No state accepts to call the people it is imprisoning or detaining for political reasons political prisoners. They don't call them political prisoners in China. They don't call them political prisoners in Azerbaijan. And they don't call them political prisoners in the United States, UK, or Sweden. It's absolutely intolerable to have that kind of self-perception. But here we have a case talking about the Swedish case, where I have never been charged with a crime, where I have already been cleared and found to be innocent, where the woman herself said that the police made it up, where the United Nations formally said the whole thing is illegal, where the state of Ecuador also investigated and found that I should be given asylum. Those are the facts. But what is the rhetoric?
Different.
The rhetoric is pretending, constantly pretending that I have been charged with a crime, never mentioning that I have been already previously cleared, never mentioning that the woman herself says that the police made it up, trying to avoid that the UN formally found that the whole thing is illegal, never even mentioning that Ecuador made a formal assessment through its formal processes and found that, yes, I am subject to persecution by the United States.
Mm-hmm.